Tip Today with Fran Curry.
With Slattery's Garage, puck on. Your Peugeot car or van might benefit from a free software upgrade. For more information and to find out if this applies to your vehicle, call the lads in Slattery's Garage, puck on 067 24111 or slatterysgarage.ie.
Thanks, Pat. Welcome back to the second hour of Tip Today. Just to remind you that we have our gardening piece towards the end of the programme. So if you have a gardening query, will you log it with us, please, as soon as you can. 083 311 3311. It's time for this.
The Tipperary Village Tour. Funded by Commission na Mban with the television licence fee. Tipperary's
Tip FM. And where are you today, Ali?
Yeah, good morning, Fran. We're north of the county this morning. We're in Clonjordan. Delighted to be here at the Thomas McDonagh Heritage Centre and Museum. John G, of course, with me always as part of the Tip Today Village Tour. Nice to be north of the county today, isn't it, John?
Seems they can't have one of us without the other, it seems, right. No, it's wonderful. It's great to be up here. And, you know, the second you come in here, you feel this is a place that drips with history. Mm-hmm. And I suppose I'm interested in history as well as that. And then I had to look up the place. And I thought, of course, Clonjordan was the Stone of Jordan. There was some crowd called it, some fella called it Jordans around here, and I'm relieved that believe there's a fascinating connection that the stone actually was brought back from the Jordan River as part of the Crusades. We'll have to find out more about that because I'm interested in pilgrimage and the Crusades, and of course the Crusades were all about making sure that pilgrims could get to the Holy Land. And then of course right here, where are we? We're in the Thomas McDonagh Centre, and he's, I suppose, with due respects to Paddy Williams and Len Gaynor and all those, he's probably still the most famous son from here. And it's fascinating because he wasn't, as far as I can see, from a radical background. And I would say he was kind of an ordinary run-of-the-mill person. And then he joined the Volunteers. But quite close to the Rising, he seems to have become involved with the IRB and be on their executive council. And as a result, of course, he signed the proclamation. And once you signed the proclamation, you signed your death warrant. But less well-known then is his brother, Joe McDonagh, and he was actually the TD here, and he died in 1922. And then, of course, we have John McDonagh. I think he'll be a very proud son here as well as that. He went on to be a renowned filmmaker as well as that. So I say they were all innovators, and Clonjordan looks like a place like that of business and innovation in that. And then another thing, I've been up here, and believe it or not, one of the last visits I made here was before COVID, and it was to come up here at the kind invitation of the communities, and it was to cut the tape on the Scahabai Bog Walk. So if I think I'm very kind of I'm talking about that, you'll forgive me. And but it is really a beautiful walk out there on the Sopwell Estate as well as that. And then finally, I mean, talk about innovation. I think it's still the only village in Ireland that has an eco-village right here. Yeah. And you know, you say, geez, trying to make that work, you think, you know, will it work? And you come through today and it seems to be thriving all the time. So the amount of innovation that's here is fantastic. Mm-hmm. And when you come in, the beautiful wide streets, the Church of Ireland, it seems to have been planned. Seems to have been a great tradition. And then, of course, the fantastic land that's around here. I think all these people live in Clonjordan, they're really lucky.
Speaking of lucky, Jim Casey, how are you doing? I haven't spoken to you, I'd say, in a, we were trying to calculate, was it 10 years since you were on the council was the last time I spoke to you?
Yeah, it's a long time ago now.
What have you been up to since?
I've learned how to do nothing. And it didn't take me
too long. Come on, Jim.
No, I picked it up very quickly. So I laze around and I do things like maybe mow the grass or I water a few plants in the polytunnel.
Yeah.
And that's about all I do.
But you're still a very active member of the community here. You always have been.
Yeah, well, I'm not as active as I used to be at this stage because time is catching up on me. And I've slowed up a lot. So I go for my daily walks up the Nochtacree Wood.
Yeah.
And I don't go too far into the wood either.
Just in case.
Just could get lost in there. No.
Tell us, what makes Clonjordan such a wonderful community to live in?
I think it's different from a lot of places. I suppose we have the eco village here. That has made the biggest change to our community. So many new people living in the place working from the place. And they have all come in and made their contribution, and they have a huge contribution to make to the day-to-day living in Clochjordan. Mm. That's why we have no problem in retaining our post office or our supermarkets or whatever, because we have a good community that are supporting each other. And that's hugely important,
yeah.
That in rural communities, there's nobody can do anything for them unless they support each other and support what's on in their face.
Yeah.
And we have that in Clochjordan, I think. We're very, very lucky. We've had the Eco Village has brought different things, different strengths, and it could have been so much different, because when the Eco Village was first mooted here, I remember I was then on the council, but North Tipperary County Council and the manager at that time insisted on getting a financial contribution from the Eco Village for services in the area, which actually weren't provided. But I wanted at the time, I wanted him to build some social and affordable houses in the Eco Village, and I thought it would bring the two communities yeah. together much easier. But anyway, management at that time was more interested in getting 100 grand from the Eco Village, and I think it was a great pity. But despite that, the people in the Eco Village have done a lot, and they could do much more if we had one service that's so badly needed in the place is the upgrading of the sewerage system.
Yeah.
People in Clochjordan can't build houses anymore because of the fact they can't connect to the local sewerage. Mm. And that is affecting the Eco Village too, because they have 30 sites for sale there and they can't sell them.
That's a shame.
And I think it's sinful, you know.
When you look back on it now, I mean, the Eco Village was, there was nothing like it in the country at that time. No. It was one of the first kind of, yeah. But when you look back on it now, has it been a success?
Oh, I think so, yeah. It has enriched our community a lot. And, there are things that you learn as you go on, and everything isn't maybe 100%, but they're a very industrious people, and there are people that have a lot of talents and a lot of ideas, and that's strengthened our community a lot.
It always surprised me that it wasn't rolled out into other communities afterwards. Yeah. Why do you think that was?
Well, I suppose at the time, if the idea had been allowed to develop as it should have had in Clochjordan, other communities would have picked it up and run with it.
Yeah.
But I'd say management of the council at the time was interested in getting in money, and they didn't care if it was at the expense of the Eco Village or whoever. It was cash they wanted, and I argued at the time it was the wrong approach, and I still think that.
Yeah.
And what about just maintaining services in the village? Is that something that bedevils you? A village here of 600 people, but it is a good bit from competing towns. I mean, are you losing services? I know you have the wonderful community cafe, which I should have mentioned down there, and that looks like maintaining service. I think we'll be popping down there, Alison, for a cup of coffee afterwards. But is it difficult to maintain services in a village like this?
I think the strength we have is that the community is supportive of the local services, and that's how we're able to maintain those services. If we didn't have the support we have, it wouldn't happen, you know?
Yeah. Jim, great to talk to you again. Thanks so much. I'll talk to you again before the end of it. What you'll also find here, though, at the Thomas McDonagh Heritage Centre and Museum is a fantastic new library. And Noreen Duggan is going to tell us about that. Hi, Noreen.
Hi, Alison. How are you?
I'm good. Good to talk to you this morning. Just before we came to air, you gave me a tour of the library. It's a beautiful facility and only newly opened, really. When did you open?
I opened in May last year.
So, Natla, so about what, we're about 8 months into it now. How's it been going?
It's going great, and it's growing steadily. The figures actually just came in a few days ago. In July, I had 2,244
members, we'll say, are
issues. Yeah. And in February 24, I had 347, so that's growing steadily. Like,
it's fantastic, because in rural communities, and sure, we all know, to avail of library services, you're having to travel into the town. So to have it available in a village, it's another amazing amenity here.
It is. It's brilliant. And you can see families coming in all the time, growing, like, they can, I can see the kids changing all the time, which is lovely. And even their interests in the books that they want is changing. And
Is this a new service that's come in here? Because if it is, it's fantastic. Because, you know, it's one extra reason. Here, say I'm going to borrow a book, but then they might go down and have a cup of coffee in the cafe, and then they might pop into Austin Centre. They all kind of roll in together. So there wasn't a library here before. It's a new service, is it?
There was a library for years here in Clochjordan with a lovely woman running it, Mary Brady, and she's since passed, and I've taken over the role. I work in Burscane Library as well. But for borrowers that come into the library, I often hear them saying they're going up to the cafe for a hot chocolate afterwards. That's where they've just come from. So it's really good.
It's not just books then as well, because you were telling me you have a growing chess club here as well.
We do. Clochjordan is in the community games for chess, and we have actually the semi-final and final on Sunday.
Brilliant.
So they come and practice in the library, so it's great.
We were talking about that. It's a real growing thing. My own little fella's doing it as well, loves chess. It's great to see them playing it.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
It's great. Yeah. So tell me then, what days are you open then for anyone who wants to come in?
I'm open Friday, 9:30 to 5:00, and I'm open Saturday, 10:00 to 1:00.
Brilliant. Noreen, we wish you every continued success with the library. Well done. And give a shout in, anyone who's in the region. I might go to Clochjordan House. Julie Baker, come closer over to me, Julie. Tell me, I had the pleasure of going up there. I went up there to take a few pictures before I came down here. Stunning, stunning facility. Tell us about Clochjordan House.
So I guess Clochjordan House today is a wedding venue that is run by my family and I. So I guess traditionally my great-grandfather, Sam Baker, bought the house back in kind of the early 1900s. We were then dairy farmers, and then we got out of that, and my mum actually set up a cookery school on the grounds. And I guess she used to teach classes to TY students, to school kids, and people from all over. And from that then came the weddings. So we did our first wedding on site 10 years ago, last November.
My God.
So that's great.
How many have you done since? Do you know? I don't want to put you on the spot, but are we going into...
I would say... God, I'd say about... 500.
That's amazing. So I mean, it's a well-oiled machine there.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah, something like that. So I guess my husband and I then moved home to the business during COVID. So November 4 years ago, and we've kind of started helping my parents out, and I guess now we're kind of stepping into it and running it, and I guess giving them a little bit more of their lives back after all their hard work setting it up.
Can I tell you about my experience, anyway? Because I have been there, and you introduced me to something.
I don't want to put you on the spot, but are we going into...
I would say, I'd say about 500.
It was my first time ever at a humanist wedding. And we were out in the woods in summer, in this beautiful weather. And I thought, right, you know, it's such a connection with the past. It was something, you know, other weddings in churches you'll forget. That's what I will never forget until the end of my life. And then we came back in, and then it started to rain. And I said, oh my God, you know. And then there was this beautiful marquee. It was like being inside. Not a drop of water was going to get in there. And the food was exquisite. And then, of course, the great thing about it is, unlike a modern hotel, the whole place drips with history, going right back to the Cromwellian period. You know me now. So I was totally in my element there. So it's one of the best weddings I've ever had. So congratulations. And that you survived COVID as well as having got through it. Because I'm involved with tourism, and my God, the hospitality industry took a hit. But I'm great to see it has bounced back. Congratulations on a wonderful product.
Because we hear a lot about how difficult it is for businesses in the hospitality sector. How has it been for you here?
Look, I guess in terms of hospitality, weddings are unique in the sense that they're booked, I'd say, a year and a half to 2 years out from the actual event. We only do weddings, so we don't open as anything else. But that's great because it's a lovely industry to be in the sense that everybody's in good form, great intentions, probably a little bit more pressure, but nothing that our team can't handle. And we're so lucky that we've been able to kind of grow our team and have people from all over the world and locally working with us. So that's been great, and it's created a great dynamic within the weddings as well.
How do you spread the word? I mean, marketing to the United States or something like that, it's so difficult. I mean, you must be failure. You either have a brilliant product and it's word of mouth. I don't know how you got it out there.
It's all word of mouth now, which is interesting. Like, it used to be, you know, Instagram. It used to be online, which does still obviously exist a little bit for us. But now every single inquiry that comes in is word of mouth, which is super. That's you know, so I guess that is more of an incentive to keep doing a good job so that you don't get so that.
Are you seeing different trends in weddings then since COVID?
I would say that weddings right after COVID were a lot bigger. I guess it was everybody rejoining together. Now I think we're seeing them getting a little bit smaller, maybe a little bit more intimate, which suits us as well, you know. So we're delighted. I guess the next stage and the next step for the business is that we have received planning, which has been great, from Tipperary County Council to replace our marquee, which is that served us very, very well over the years. But we're replacing with a permanent structure and new kitchens and everything to really kind of drive us forward into the future, which has been great. So delighted to get that. So that'll be going on from January to March next year.
Oh, brilliant. So busy couple of years ahead for you. Julie, anyone who's looking to maybe get more information on Clochjordan House, how can they do that?
Yeah, so they can email info@clochjordanhouse.com, where they'll get a response very quickly from our wedding coordinators.
Perfect. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today, Julie. Will we give Julie an Albula bus? Well done, Julie. Joe, come on up to me, Joe. Joe. Now, I think we've spoken about it on the show a couple of times. There's a very unique club here in Clochjordan. I don't think it's anywhere. It's certainly not anywhere else in the county. I don't know about anywhere else in the country. Joe, tell us about the Circus Club.
Well, the Circus Club began when I moved here, because it's something that I've always been involved in, and I've always been a part of making youth circuses happen. So it was something I wanted to do when I moved here, and we've grown and grown, and we have three classes every week all year round in the local hall here, with local young people coming to learn a huge variety of circus skills. And you were asking if there's circus anywhere else in the country.
Yeah.
There's lots of other youth circuses. There's youth circus organisations in Northern Ireland, in Derry and in Belfast, and also here in Galway, Dublin and Cork. And we're really tied in with that national network.
Yeah.
And we're actually really, really proud to host the Irish Youth Circus Gathering every year.
Oh, brilliant.
So that's a national event.
Yeah.
And it's been hosted every year in Clochjordan. And young people from all of those youth circuses come, and they stay here in our local hostel, and all of the local businesses that we've talked to today help us out. We have social evenings in the cafe. We've used the Heritage Centre here for a film night in the past. We use all of the local halls to have different workshops going on.
Yeah.
And it always finishes with a big unicycle hockey game.
Brilliant.
In the GAA Centre, which I love. So,
I love it.
And every year I say, shall we host it in one of the other places? And the response I get is there's nowhere that can host it like Clochjordan, because we've got four amazing halls, so we can have a huge number of workshops happening concurrently. We've got an amazing, welcoming local community, and the young people are safe. They can stay in the local hostel, and they can walk between all those venues and the cafes and all the people who row in and help with the catering. And they always, always comment on how everyone is so welcoming, and that they just bump into people on the street and they ask them.
Tell me what kind of activities you do then with the Circus Club.
So we do juggling, we do acrobatics, we do stilt walking, unicycling, tight wire walking. During COVID, we did high wire walking on the green because we had to move outdoors with big long poles to balance. And we're actually planning a big community event here in Clochjordan, hopefully this winter, which will celebrate that wire walking and light it up in an evening spectacle. And we're
I love it for kids maybe who aren't into sport that much, but still want maybe the activity and the fun. And that's exactly what this gives.
Yeah, so loads of young people come to us, some of them really into their sport and others not so much. And they, you really, really see them grow in their physical confidence and their coordination.
Yeah.
And it's a really great non-competitive way, I suppose, to engage in physical
activity. What strikes me here, though, is what strikes me when you're setting up a new business, insurance, is it a problem? Because it's bedeviling cross-eyed. It is.
Yeah, it's a challenge. So we're part of the Irish Street and Circus Spectacle Network, and they're constantly campaigning along with many others around the insurance issue, and it's certainly something to be mindful of, and it's something that we're part of. We would submit all our statistics and that kind of thing. But we also have a huge amount of safety and risk assessment and all of that thing. And one of the big things about circus is that it's about kind of learning to take risks in a safe and a supported way, really. So that's us.
Well, and anyone who's looking for information then on the club, how can they do that?
They can go to our website, which is www.clockjordancircusclub.ie.
Joe, lovely to meet you and wish you all the best with it. Thanks a million. I give Joe a boulabus. And what we'll do is we're going to go for a quick break and then we'll be live here from the Thomas McDonagh Heritage Centre Museum when we return.
Tip FM's Tip Today with Fran Curry.
In association with Slattery's of Pecan, Tipperary's main Peugeot dealer. Slattery's Garage Pecan, the name you can trust for over 50 years in the Premier County. Slattery'sGarage.ie. Michael.
Tip Today with Fran Curry.
With Slattery's Garage Pecan, you can't beat experience. With over 50 years maintaining Peugeot cars and vans, we like to call ourselves the experts. Call Slattery's Garage for a free vehicle health check today. 067 24111 or slattery'sgarage.ie.
The Tipperary Village Tour. Funded by Commissioner Naman with the television licence fee.
You join us live here in Clockjordan this morning at the Thomas McDonagh Heritage Centre and Museum, where we're meeting some of the local groups and community groups, I suppose, who are working in the area. It's the latest stop, of course, on the Tip Today Village Tour, and if you want to take part in it, just email your details to tiptoday@tipfm.com. Colette and Donald are going to tell us about First Steps. Now, a lot of the villages in the areas we go to have fantastic childcare and creche facilities. Clockjordan is no different. Donald, I might start with you. Tell us, when did First Steps begin?
Well, First Steps was born out of the village enhancement scheme that we undertook here back in 2005. We did an analysis of the needs in the area, in the community, and childcare was top of the list. We had no community childcare facilities at that time. So we applied for funding and we were successful, and we completed the creche in 2009. So September 2009 it opened. I think we had 9 kids
to begin
in
with.
September. Yeah.
And how many have we now, Colette?
In our ECC programme in full day, we have 45.
That's
and
brilliant.
In our after school, we have 26.
My God. Yeah. How many staff then?
We have 13 in total.
That's fantastic. Yeah. That is busy, so there.
Yeah, and we've just recently acquired planning permission for an extension. So, please God, that'll be starting soon.
Well done.
For an extra classroom and a sensory room.
Were you expecting this level of I suppose, participation in it or need for it?
I don't think the Board of Management really, when they opened in 2009, really didn't expect it to grow at the level it's growing, and it's constantly growing and growing. The numbers are going up and up and up, which is why we felt there was a need for an extension.
Yeah. And Donald, I suppose it goes to show that people want to stay in their localities. I mean, people don't want to be going into towns and travelling far to get childcare.
Yeah, hopefully every community needs a good childcare facility. When we were planning the creche, myself and Brendan Shepherd, we used to be up till 3 o'clock in the morning trying to figure out. You had to figure out how many children there was going to be born in the next 4 years.
Oh my God!
How many of them had medical cards? So I remember being up at 3 o'clock in the morning trying to meet deadlines to get this stuff in, and we just keep getting it wrong every time. And it sent it back to us, and we tried again. And eventually we bluffed our way through it, and we got the funding. So, but it was challenging now. It was very challenging. And we had no idea we were always nervous if it was going to work or not. We had no idea it would have grown to what it is to now. You know, it's been very successful, and that's down to the fantastic management and staff down there. You know, we've been very lucky all the way along.
And Colette, sure, that's you and all the staff down there as well.
Oh, it's definitely the staff. They're the backbone of the service. You know, couldn't run without them, and they're dedicated. And, you know, they always put the children first and foremost, and, you know, whatever the children are interested in or whatever activities we can bring into the service for the children. We're always met with support from the management as well. So,
and what's great about you, the little kids coming in maybe for creche and maybe after school, but they're growing up in their community from very young ages.
Yeah, it's an amazing facility for any community to have. Like, I'm not from the area, and I always say it's just a fantastic service for any community to have.
Yeah, I'd presume if any other community would be looking at setting up, I know it's probably a very tough process, but certainly worth it in the end.
Yeah, definitely worth it. I mean, it has provided accessible, affordable childcare for the community, and that was always our aim and our intention when we started. So, as I said, it's been very successful, and we've been very lucky with great management and great staff the whole way through. Some of those staff are with us from the beginning, you know.
Yeah. Well done to you both, and wish you all the best. Anyone who's looking to maybe find out more about, how can they do that?
They can send an email to stepsfirst@hotmail.com.
Perfect. Colette and Donald, thank you so much. Lovely to talk to you both this morning. Gilbert, I might talk to you next. But sure, of course, we always have to talk about the GAA whenever we go to a village, don't we, Gilbert?
Indeed.
Tell us, Killeron McDonagh's, of course, hardy and strong up here. Are we hurling or football mostly?
It's mostly hurling. We also play football as well. So there's a great tradition of hurling in particular in the parish, going back to 1901 when the De Witts were the dominant team in North Tipperary, winning 7 North Championships and the county final in 1902. And the De Witts went into decline then, and in the mid-30s then the best hurlers in the parish came together under the banner of Killeron McDonagh. That was the unifying force. They won the North Championship in 40, 44, 59, 65. Golden period in the 70s, 3 county titles, 3 wow. North titles. Then the All-Ireland Club final in 1986. And in 2022, we bridged the 37-year gap by winning the county final. So that was a tremendous occasion.
That's fantastic. And in terms of juvenile teams and stuff, I know we always talk about it, how it can be hard sometimes to get numbers, particularly on certain teams. At certain age levels, it can be hard to get the numbers. Has that been an issue here?
It hasn't really, and this is a very important year for the club, because this year the Camogie Club and the GAA Club amalgamated.
Brilliant.
In 2022, we conducted a comprehensive survey among members of the Camogie Club, the GAA Club, players, officials, supporters, and 2 things emerged from that survey. One was the overwhelming desire for both clubs to amalgamate, and secondly was the provision of a second pitch. And at the AGMs in 2022, both clubs unanimously passed a motion to amalgamate, and this year it came into being, and now we're the Killeron McDonagh's Camogie and GAA Club. And our aim in the club is to give every boy and girl in the parish an opportunity to play hurling or camogie in a safe environment, and hopefully they will actually stay with us then later on and maybe become officials, selectors, etc.
Yeah.
Each volunteer that's involved with the club is Garda vetted. They also complete a safeguarding course, a coaching course, so parents can be confident when their boys and girls come to play and train with the club, they are in safe hands and are treated with dignity and respect.
Would you like to see the 2 associations coming together? You know, the way Camogie and hurling, I mean, that's there at the moment, but seems to be out there a long time. Would that be good for the association?
I think it's going to happen in 2027, the integration, but I think it's very important that it happens at the local level first. And there's been informal cooperation in all parishes among the clubs for years. We share facilities, we share fundraising, the same personnel are involved in both clubs as well. I think it's a natural evolution.
Yeah.
And certainly from in our club, it has strengthened our club. We've got new volunteers on the committee, new energy, new ideas, and that complements the experience and the wisdom that's there for from the members who have been there for many years and many decades.
That's great, because there can be division among the different facets of the club sometimes. So it's great to see it come together.
It can, and there's great unity within the club.
Yeah.
And also now with the amalgamation of the club, we now have our sights set on providing a second pitch.
Yeah.
And we're in the final stages of concluding the purchase of 5 acres of land, which will develop a new pitch for a second pitch that's badly needed in a walking track.
Fantastic.
And this is going to benefit the whole community.
Yeah, because we're seeing that in a lot of pitches around the county and around the country as well, and they become such a focal point. Even if they haven't been already, they become such a focal point with the walkways around them, don't they?
Yes, indeed. I mean, the Jade Club has been the heartbeat of the community in this parish since 1901, and I think the amalgamation of both clubs is only going to strengthen that.
Yeah.
The Camogie and Jade Club, it's an ideal way for new people coming into the parish to integrate, to get to know people. And some of the most committed and dedicated members in our club at the moment are people who've moved into the parish. Like, they're more Irish than the Irish themselves.
The blow-ins, Gilbert, is that it?
The blow-ins. And on our jersey now, we have our logo is Club of One, Pubble of One, One Club, One Community. So we're moving forward together. And like I mentioned, we have a very important fundraiser coming up on May the 7th in the Abbey Court. I'm not allowed to say too much about it. It's a novel fundraiser. It hasn't been done in Tipperary previously. It's called the Quid Games, and it's going to be a fantastic night, and we'll raise the finance that we need to develop our second pitch.
Oh, we look forward to hearing more about it, Gilbert. Lovely to talk to you today. Thanks so
much.
Bonnie, come on up. Give Gilbert a hand there. Thanks for that, Gilbert. Hon Kilroan. Bonnie Hayes, we've spoken on the phone for years and years, and today, well, it's not today, but today in a long time since we met. How are you doing?
Not too bad at all, Alison, thank you.
Tell me about the Drama Society here.
Ah, sure. The present group is going since 1966. Jim was one of the founder members. He wrote me in 1971, and I've been hanging around since.
Tell me, what's been the schedule for you this year then? Have you been on stage?
We haven't. We had a bit of an issue. We had a play picked and we commenced and we were rehearsing and we applied for the performing rights and we were refused. See, a lot of these agents are London agents. That's what you're dealing with. So, yeah, some professional crowd were taken down the road, said it wouldn't allow any amateur productions while that's going on. So we had to drop that and go back and start again.
That's very frustrating.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're rehearsing at the moment just once a week, and we're hoping to stage it in November. We'll take a break for the summer and come back early September and plow into it. So we're middle of November.
How many members have you in it?
When the time comes. At the moment, you just have the cast and a director, and you might have a prompter with you, but when the time comes, you know, dressing, you could have 30 to 40 people altogether.
Mm.
You need all those. It's not just a member of having cast, you know. You need so many backstage people and everything, you know.
So it's a very creative area, I think, Clock Jordan, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I mean, the history of drama here goes back for the best part of 100 years, you know, altogether. As I said, the present group was formed in 66. And we're surviving year by year. We get new members in it. It's harder to get fellas in than girls. Yeah, it's a huge commitment, of course. It's a huge commitment when time comes. And when you put your name down, when you take a part, you know, you have to be there every night that you rehearse.
But is drama coming back nationally? You know what I'm saying? A few years ago now, I used to be at things and they'd be half full. Now I was down at the festival in Holy Cross. I was there a month, playing to full houses, standing ovations, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I just wonder, is there a new cycle where people are appreciating that? And my God, the standard there was the same. You wouldn't complain if it was in the Abbey Theatre. You'd say that's like so. Is that, you think there's a reawakening of interest in
there is. We find here now, even with young people, despite all the technology and all the things and all the stuff they have, live entertainment. And it's like the girl talking about the circus club. People love live entertainment.
Yeah.
To see something live on stage, taking something from a book, bringing it to life, and putting it on. And as I said, the amount of young people, we get a lot of young teenagers and all that line of stuff.
That's brilliant.
We learned that with Zoom, didn't we?
Absolutely.
It just doesn't work, and that's it. And I thought college now has been Zoom. Just doesn't work. Nothing like being there live.
No.
Nothing. Have real, you know, warm-blooded people up on the stage.
Correct.
It's fantastic.
Correct.
Bonnie, lovely to talk to you this morning. Thanks so much for that,
Alison.
Bonnie. And best of luck going on in the future. Garode, Come on over, Gerard. I know we've met you before because we did a walks and talks actually last year with you up in Scaw by Bog.
Hello, good morning.
And
to
we
you.
Have a load of walks around here to do. The Knocknacree Woods, of course, is beautiful. Yeah. Scaw by Bog is beautiful.
Yeah.
So there's no shortage of them here.
No, we're very fortunate. I think Donald referenced earlier our last integrated village plan process. So one of the objectives of that was safe walking, developing safe walking routes locally. So in partnership with Quilja, we developed three loot walks in Knocknacree Woodlands at the edge of the village. And the success of that then led to our collaboration with Quilja on a raised bog restoration program at Scaw by Bog, which you were out to before.
Yeah.
And then we put in boardwalks. And in May 19, John here very kindly opened, cut the ribbon on our national loop trail, the loop of the Hyle and the Hon at Scaw by in Sopwith Woods. So we're actually the only part of the... in this part of the county, we're the only area that have loop walks for the visitor to enjoy. So people from Nina, Ross Gray, Burs Cane, of course, is close by, and Clot Jordan all come regularly, every day, actually.
Are you finding that it is a big draw, not just for people around the locality, but around the county and around the country?
Big time. People like to walk.
Yeah.
I think people like to walk at their own pace, with their kids, you know, all kind of ages. Take their time, be out in nature, immerse themselves in the trees. Life can be busy, life can be stressful. We read new reports out about the unhappiness rates among younger people today.
Yeah.
So people's lives are challenging, and I think people like to get out to nature spaces and just slow down and listen to bird song, enjoy the trees, or even just work out, get some of the toss out of their heads, walk them out.
Yeah,
exactly. Get out. I think what I would say to people is get out the Clock Jordan. I think that's great. But make an experience of it. Go out, maybe do a Scaw by or one of the woods up in Knocknacree, but then come in and leave a little bit of spending behind. Go into the local cafe or go into Austin's, or maybe if your tank is a bit low in petrol, I presume you still have a filling station.
There is, yeah,
fill up, you know. That kind of thing. I always think that's it. You're losing the beauty of an area like this. But then give a little back to the people. Think about them. I always think, we'd certainly try to do that in Mid-Tip Hillwalkers. But it is fantastic, and it's a beautiful walk to start because it's dead level and there's woods and bog and everything else in it. I really love it. It's fantastic. So get out there. Maybe people in South Tip, what do you know about North Tip? Come up here, have a walk, and then maybe pop into the cafe. That great day.
That's it. All welcome.
Perfect, Gerard. Lovely to talk to you this morning.
You.
Thanks so much for that. Paddy. Come on up to me, Paddy, because, of course, we're going to finish because we are here at the Thomas McDonagh Heritage Centre Museum. I mean, as John was saying at the beginning, very rich in history, this area. No more so here, and it's all on showcase here, which is great.
It is, yeah. I suppose the McDonagh family have put Clochardine on the map, and this centre was opened in 2013 to honour the legacy of McDonagh, and it also covers other local history events, significant history events since.
And John, what kind of an impact has it had?
I think absolutely fantastic, because I think we didn't know much about them. I think in the past, all these seven signatories were kind of cardboard cut-out people that didn't have lives otherwise. We didn't understand them. And now through this, we're getting to understand it. We'll say that, you know, some people were radical like Clark from the start, but it seems as if to me, and maybe, you know, that McDonagh came relatively late. He wasn't from a Republican background like McDiarmid here. So, you know, that's what fascinates me. We know more about them. And I would have thought, I don't agree with this, if you said 1913, will this guy be executed as a revolutionary in 3 years' time? You say, no, absolutely. A million to one against, and still it happens.
Yeah, well, McDonagh started getting interested in the Irish language and culture when he was teaching in St. Kieran's in Kilkenny. He got involved in the Gaelic League there, and then moved on to Fermoy as well, where he was active. And while he was in Fermoy, along with De Valera and another Clochardine man, Patrick Kennedy, he founded the ASTI, the Secondary Teachers Trade Union, which a lot of people would be very surprised at.
Yeah, that's right.
So he was a very active man. So and then he used to go to the Aran Islands to learn Irish, and he was known as Farron Roher on the Aran Islands, because he was the first man to bring a bicycle to the Aran Islands, and that's where he met Pierce. So if he hadn't gone to the Aran Islands, we might have no museum
and
here.
And then he went to work in St. Enda's, didn't he?
Then he went into St. Enda's, and he was studying at UCD for his BA and MA. And he went to France for 3 months to study French. And we actually have the bill from the hotel that he had in France.
Wow.
It's on display inside it for his 3 month stay in France.
Yeah, you have so many of those treasures here as well. I remember you showing me, was it a flag or a wall hanging that was here the last time?
Yeah.
And you have the old film as well, remember?
Yeah.
What
was we have a film when the first stall was set up in 1919, they had no money. And John McDonough, who was a brother of Thomas's, had been in the Rising, and he was working as a filmmaker for the Irish American Film Company, and he was making a commercial film in Dublin in St. Enda's called Willie Riley and His Colleen Bawn, and Collins got him to make a 7-minute propaganda film to raise money for the first stall. So that was filmed in St. Enda's, showing all the relatives of 1916 and Pierce's mother and sisters and all people connected with 1916 presenting Collins with a cheque for £100. So that film was shown all over the world and it brought in around £500,000, particularly in America.
And then there's the flag, isn't there, as well? I, with due respect to Michael, that was the thing I recommended this morning. It fascinated me because that's about the land war.
Yeah.
I think that's really neglected. I mean, look, with due respect to 1848 and 1867, there were risings. They didn't really bring about any change. But the land war was the first time the people got conscious, and they brought around real change. In the end, the land was handed back to the people of Ireland. What a social change. And you have the flag that they marched behind here.
We're very lucky. I think there's only about 9 or 10 in the country. A flag from 1883 from the Arcrony branch of the Irish National League, which was the successor of the Land League. Land League was outlawed in 81 because they were causing mayhem for the landlords. So this banner was in an attic for years. That's how it survived. And Ger Darcy from Arcrony, who was a Fine Gael councillor, his family held the flag and they kindly lent it to the museum here.
It's in great condition.
It's brilliant now, and it's very unique, and it features the portrait of John Dillon, who was MP for Tipperary from 1880 to 83 in Westminster, and he was the father of Jim Dillon, who was leader of Fine Gael in the 1960s.
Yeah.
And John Dillon was the son of John Blake Dillon, the Young Irelander. So the whole flag is steeped in history, you know.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you have William J. Spain, who I think you have him here as well as that. He was the first man to win an All-Ireland in hurling and football. Is that right?
Yeah, William J. Spain was from Moan Finn, which is at the Killarwan end of the parish. And he was the first man in Ireland, long before any of the Cork fellas did it, or Ray Cummins or Jimmy Barry Murphy. He won the football with Limerick in 1887. He scored a goal. He scored the only goal in the final. So he was the first man to score a goal in the football final. He went to Dublin then. He was working in the drapery trade and he was working in Arnott's. And he played with CJ Kickhams in Dublin. They beat Tulloch and Clare in the All-Ireland hurling final in 89. He scored 3 goals in that. So he was the first man to score 3 goals in the hurling final long before Larry Corbett did it.
Yeah.
So he then went to America. He was a brilliant athlete. He played in the first floodlit Gaelic football game in Madison Square Garden in 1890. He was a star of that match. It probably was only 13 aside, I said, because they were holding soccer and rugby events there.
Yeah.
And he later became a millionaire. And
how did he do that?
He was working in the silk trade. He had served a time in the drapery business in Ireland. And he had one son. The son died, and he was going to the Jesuit University in the Bronx. And he built a seismograph station in that university and is still working today. In memory of his son.
Right.
It's called the William J. Spain Seismic Observatory. And so if anyone, if you're in the Bronx, go down to the university, you'll see the building commemorating William Spain.
I wonder if he's the only person who won in All-Ireland who went on to become a millionaire, you know?
He was probably the first player to win in All-Ireland and become a millionaire.
Then Gaelic isn't won yet, is he, as far as you know?
Paddy, tell us about the museum then, the days that it's open, the hours it's open.
It's open every day except Monday, and it's open 2 to 4 every day.
And do you have a lot of tourists coming in here looking?
Yeah, we get a lot of people. You get a lot of people whose ancestors would have been from Clochjordan, and they come here. They're looking up graves or looking up old homes, and they often drop in here, and we help them in any way we can.
Oh, fantastic! Lovely to talk to you today. Thanks for having us here. That brings to an end today's village tour from Clochjordan. So from here, from the Thomas McDonagh Heritage Centre and Museum, back to you in studio.
Thanks very much indeed, Ali, and thanks to John G as well. Lovely programme there, lovely hour from the Thomas McDonagh Centre in Clonjordan. I've been there many times and it's well worth a visit if you haven't been so far. Just to remind you again, we'll talk gardening towards the end of the programme. If you have a gardening query, will you log it with us, please? 083-311-3311.
Tip FM's Tip Today with Fran Curry.
In association with Slattery's of Pecan, Tipperary's main Peugeot dealer. Slattery's Garage Pecan, the name you can trust for over 50 years in the Premier County. Slattery'sGarage.ie.